Welcome back to Yeah, That's a Pepper Thing. First up, we've got Harrison wrapping his Dr. Pepper in a tiny quilt so it feels at home. Oh, how tender. That's a Pepper Thing! And over to Becca, who's whispering affirmations to her can.
You're sweet. You're unique. You're the best thing I ever poured over ice.
She swears it makes it taste better. It's not a science thing, but it's a Pepper Thing! Why do they all do it? All for that sweet, delicious, truly one-of-a-kind taste of Dr. Pepper. It's a Pepper Thing!
The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk.
With Aviva Insurance.
And you're very welcome to the debrief. We're going to look back on some of the big stories of the week. And today I'm joined in the studio by tech editor with the Irish Independent, Adrian Weckler, journalist and consumer columnist with the Irish Examiner, Katrina Redmond is here, and school principal and host of If I Were the Minister for Education podcast, Simon Lewis. And you're all very welcome to the programme. Thank you for being with us. So we heard this week that households are facing around €2,000 in additional costs in bills, everything from food to insurance and, of course, energy going up. So the question is, should people be given more help to do things like install solar panels? Adrian, I'll come to you first on that one.
Yeah, well, I have a very strong view on this. And the answer to your last question is yes. I think it's an absolute no-brainer. Let's start with solar panels. So there's about 177,000 homes in Ireland out of the 1.2 million homes that can take solar panels, that have solar panels. Now, they're the people who could afford to spend between 7,000 and 15,000 euro, roughly, to put them on. They got the SEAI grant of between 1,800 euro and 3,000 euro. It's 1,800 euro now. They're the ones who could afford it, who are now benefiting from, you know, 150 euro electricity bills, 100 euro electricity bills, while the people who couldn't afford to do that or weren't motivated to do that are now getting 500 euro electricity bills. It is a no-brainer.
And all that money that we heard about this morning that has been collected,
532 million euro
for the Climate Action Fund
coffers, which was collected on a 2% levy, which is sitting in government coffers, which wasn't spent. So it's a no-brainer. People have different views on solar, and they're in the weeds arguments about the origin of the panels and the contribution they make to the overall footprint for the ordinary household. And not every household can take solar, but for the ordinary household that can take solar, it is absolute no-brainer to put panels on. And it's incomprehensible why the subsidy is only 1,800 euro and why the government doesn't roll out.
Yeah, especially like if we want to try and get ahead, Simon, of this increase in cost that we're all going to be facing now, 2,000 euro is the estimate. You've done this, have you? Have you done the retrofit?
Yeah, we're actually in the process of it right now in our own house. We applied for that one-stop shop scheme. We were lucky enough that our house is eligible for it. So we're sort of in the process of getting solar panels into the house. Mm-hmm. We're moving from our oil heating to a heat pump, getting the door done. So it's, you know, we're very lucky that we were able to afford to do that. So,
but how was the process? Was it complicated?
No, like really, really simple. We rang around the various companies. Someone came to our house and told us what we needed to do, and we just have to wait now for them
and
to be ready.
And do they look after the application process for the grants then as well for you?
Basically, yeah, everything. It's been really straightforward, probably the most straightforward thing we've ever done in our house.
And hopefully you'll get to the point before the winter where you'll be saving this winter on your bills, which is where, Katrina, everybody would want to be, but some people will not be able to do that.
Yeah, and I think this 2,000 euro cost per family that we're talking about here, I think it's really important to remember that there are people in middle to higher range salaries who can absorb it by dropping some of the non-essential purchases. But the families who are on the lower income range, they're the families who can't adapt and adopt a 2,000 euro hit to their finances. Mm-hmm. So the government's talking about,
I would argue, most people in the middle can't afford to either.
No, and I think that's very true, because when you're committed to rent and to mortgage, it's very difficult to adapt your budget to take into account for an additional 2,000 euro per year. You're quite right.
But you're also dropping things like, you know, after school classes for your children, which are maybe considered luxuries by some, but that it changes your standard of living intrinsically if you have to do that.
Yes, and not just that then. That standard of living for you changes, but there's also a knock-on impact on the smaller businesses. So you'll see that knock-on impact on the likes of after-school services, classes, then you're talking about restaurants and hospitality industry. The less money you have to spend in the community will have a knock-on effect on community mm-hmm. jobs. So there is a much wider picture here. But ultimately, what you're talking about is the gap widening. The gap between the haves and the have-nots is widening. And those who don't have it have less again.
So what would you be in favour of? Would you be in favour of the government saying, if you want solar panels, we'll get them for you, or some sort of an intervention like the energy credits that we have had in previous years?
So the energy credits has an awful lot of merit, particularly when it's targeted at families who are on lower incomes. So you're talking at taking a look at it from the family income supplement, or that's the family payment system. You're talking about it from the qualified child increase for people who are on lower incomes. But the other thing is, if we're talking about that particular climate change levy, that portion of 532 million that hasn't been paid out, we also need to take a look at things like climate adaptation and mitigation, because down the line, when we have more flooding like we had in previous years, then families are going to be even more hard pressed. How are we going to pay for those families who have their houses flooded out, families who have been impacted by the likes of Storm Éowyn? These are also the things that money needs to go towards mm-hmm. spending.
There's a lot of regret, isn't there? We hear it this week around the fact that we didn't move quickly enough to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. And we are literally going to pay the price for that now, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems so strange that we can't seem to plan for these eventualities. We know what we have to do, I think, mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of hoping that the government will actually take the lead on it.
What did you see in Iceland, Simon?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting thing. I went on my honeymoon to Iceland. We don't like the sun in our house very much. And it was just surprising to me when we were over there how in Iceland they seem to be able to grow food that you wouldn't expect to grow in Iceland, because they use the thermal energy. So they were growing bananas and things like that, which is really, really unusual and very strange. And again, you know, we have all the same resourcing, you know, in Ireland that we could use to adapt to grow food here and not rely on importing food. I think that's, mm-hmm. you know, one, you know, it's a long-term kind of thing, I imagine, but it's certainly something we could easily plan for.
Food security was another topic that we discussed on the programme this week. You wanted to come in there,
yeah,
Adrian?
Just one word in terms of intervention, what we could do about it. And I don't like to be the voice to say this, but I am aware that the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council pointed out that Ireland's underlying deficit, that's the amount of money that we have, excluding the windfall taxes that we make from the big tech companies, is going to rise this year to around 13 billion euro. Mm-hmm. So over the last 3 years, three companies, Microsoft, Apple and Eli Lilly, have represented about half of all of Ireland's corporate taxes. The gap between what Irish companies, what we actually make for ourselves, and what these big tech companies actually give us in windfall taxes to pay for hospitals and roads and interventions is now widening. So, you know, that's an unpopular thing to say. But when we're talking about interventions...
Your point is, be careful.
A little bit, yeah. Mm. So I am in favour of subsidies for solar. I am in favour of easing things. And we can look at the fuel protests and the 750 million that mm-hmm. we've done to ease that. We are starting to spend the kind of money that if one or two of these companies decides to cut back
up
and
sticks
leave,
and go, yeah,
we actually can't support ourselves mm-hmm. in the country. So just
yeah, I suppose when it comes to the Climate Action Fund, we have paid into those funds. You know, every time we're stopping at the petrol station, and it's just that frustration that I think people feel today that the money hasn't been spent.
Yep.
Some of it then from the carbon tax has gone back into general taxation, which I think drives people mad because we were told that was ring-fenced. So in that case then, if I ask you about hospital parking charges, which we were discussing this week as well, they have increased in many of our hospitals. Should people be asked, people who are using the hospitals now, be asked to pay those charges?
In my opinion, no.
Okay.
I have a visceral dislike of that, and this is the reason. In a time of trauma, or if you have to go, I've had lots of examples in my own life in recent years of this. You go, if you're bereaved or if you're going to the hospital for a particular reason, it hits you in a visceral way if you then feel like you're paying for a commercial service or you have to pay to enter the premises. So I'm against it. I think the commercialization of hospitals in general, whether it's, you know, €4.50 coffees in the canteen, whether it's, you know, allowing concessions in, whether it's, you know, paid car parks, I don't like it. Now, the obvious retort from the hospitals is, yes, but, you know, we make much needed money from those car park fees, number one, to keep the hospital going. And number two, that also stops casual parkers in city centre locations like the Mater Hospital, St James's Hospital in Dublin, for example.
Leaving their car there for the day.
There for the day. Well, in the UK, in places like in Scotland and Wales, where they've abolished hospital car parking fees, they have solved this to an extent. They use technology. They use the same technology that the guards use, for example, for license plates, where they will scan your license plate. It's barrier operated. The barrier goes up. Your car goes in. You have a ticket. You validate it on the inside. And depending on the reason for your visit, you're either charged or you're not charged. Mm-hmm. If you're there for a day visit, if you have to stay there overnight,
you're not charged. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, the hospitals made 17 million, Katrina, last year from the parking charges. And hospital managers have said, fine, we have no problem with not having parking charges here, but that 17 million is going to have to come from somewhere. Where is it going to come from? The taxpayer. So you'd have to increase the HSE budget. So who do you think should pay? Taxpayers or people who use the car parks?
Well, I think what we're actually missing is a huge chunk of vital information. And that is the paucity or the really poor public transport links to an awful lot of these hospitals. If the public transport links were better, then we wouldn't have people driving to the hospitals. For example, I live in a town in North County Dublin, Balbriggan. There is no direct transport link to any hospital in our local area. None to Our Lady of Lourdes, none to Beaumont. And if we wanted to go to the Mater, we'd have to travel on a bus, which would take us over 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if those public transport links were better, then of course there would be less parking.
Well, that's particularly pertinent for staff.
Exactly.
Yeah, who also have to pay for parking. Simon, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I think I'm somewhere in the same boat as the other two, except I kind of wonder, like, how do you mitigate against chancers? You know, I think we're when it is a rule in particularly in Ireland, we try and find a way around it. And, you know, I don't know, maybe would people start sharing their tickets or their passes and things like that? It might be a small thing, but it is
so
awful.
Using it as a commuter car
kind
park.
Of in a way as a park and ride or a park and walk if you're lucky enough. But at the same time, you have to think about the people who are, you know, anyone who visits a hospital is not in a good place mentally. They're not having a laugh going in or anything like that. And we need to make that as easy as possible. And if there's a way of guaranteeing the social responsibility of people who might abuse the system, maybe technology is the answer there. Mm-hmm. I wonder how it would work.
But as a taxpayer then, would you be happy for another 17 million to go into the health service to cover what the hospitals would lose?
I think so. You know, I don't have a problem with that. I think our hospitals are exceptionally important places and they keep us alive when we're not well. And if that's an extra couple of euro of tax, I think that's worth the investment.
Katrina, are you okay with that?
Well, I don't know whether 17 million is the bigger picture price that we're talking about, because all of these car parks are administered by various different parking companies. So the 17 million is what the HSE has after the parking companies and the parking management has been paid for. So that gap, that 17 million that has to be found, I think might be actually an awful lot more than that, might be double or even treble the amount.
Okay, so we'd have to be ready, willing and able to cough up that as taxpayers to cover the cost of cutting back on parking. Okay, to the tech companies, Adrian, I'm going to come to you on this one. They were asked in the Oireachtas committee this week whether social media is addictive and they pretty much said no. Yeah. Are they right there?
No, they're wrong. and they're factually wrong. And if you'd asked me this a year or 2 years ago, I would have gone some way to supporting what they said in the Oireachtas committee. Because addiction is a loaded word. We talk about addiction in terms of alcohol and drugs. And we talk about people losing their homes and their lives and things like that. Social media addiction has always been a slightly fuzzier term than that. We talk about it in a different context. But the European Commission, in February of this year, made a preliminary ruling against TikTok, really as a proxy for most of the social media companies, because it has a similar case going against Meta, which said that TikTok is in fact addictive, that it uses patterns that uses patterns that addicts people to its algorithms mm-hmm. and its systems. And it said that it's not a binding decision, that TikTok can challenge it. That comes around the same time as the US case in Los Angeles, which you probably read about, where a court, a jury also found Meta, which is Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp, mm-hmm. And YouTube
were addictive. And addictive. That was a precedent-setting case, wasn't precedent. It? It opens the floodgates.
So from a factual point of view, it's now swinging more towards social media is addictive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no surprise to me that almost all of the social media companies turned up to the Oireachtas Committee. A couple of years ago, only half of them might have turned up. Said, now we don't really have to bother with some Oireachtas Committee. Who are these guys anyway? They all turned up, best foot forward. And of course,
so what you're saying that they're concerned about this?
I think they are.
Okay.
I think the tide has turned. At the beginning of the year, if you remember, JD Vance was over lecturing us, saying that you better not touch our tech companies. We'll tariff the hell out of you. This is about freedom. You guys are all, you know, suffocating under regulation. We're the ones who know how to do business. You know, a few threats over invading Greenland, etc. Later, and court cases later. And very much the tide is going the other way. And I think the social media and the tech companies are on the back foot.
Katrina, you come at this from two sides, don't you? Because you see social media at work in your house, as we all do, but also you run a social media consultancy company. So you're trying to keep us watching.
Yeah, try and keep the eyeballs on the clients that I work for. So yeah, I do see it from both sides, but I also believe, yes, absolutely, it is addictive. I have no doubt in my mind that it is addictive. And I am also a Feroga youth leader to a group of young people who we specialise in tech. And I am forever explaining to them, be careful of what you do online. Don't stay online. Trying to persuade for a tech club, it's very unusual. I'm trying to persuade them to spend less time online. But when they do it in a mindful way. And I think that's a very difficult challenge. And I'm sure Simon has similar challenges at play, because you kind of have to accept that young people are going to use social media today. But how do we teach them to use it in a responsible way? And then the other side of the coin is, I often think we talk about young people an awful lot and the dangers around social media for young people. But an aspect of social media that we don't talk about an awful lot is the dangers of social media for older people who have not been familiar with the use of social media and are now presented with this amazing screen and these algorithms to go down. And I think it is an absolute disaster. Anybody who has an older person in their life who uses social media knows you have to warn them to come and check with you, to fact check. You may have to reset their algorithm several times because they've gone down a rabbit hole. It's an extremely difficult space to be. So it's not just young people we have to be mindful of, I think.
Why are you agreeing it's a disaster?
Because the Gen Alpha and the Gen Z. So Gen Z we typically talk about as people in their 20s. Gen Alpha are the teens. They're the ones who are way savvier than the millennials and the Gen. I'm Gen X. The millennials are the guys in the 30s and 40s. The Gen Alphas and the Gen Z, the young folks, the kids are way savvier. They know how to limit their screen time. They can sniff AI at 100 yards away. They can sniff disinformation, misinformation at 100 yards away. They're the ones who turn off, who turn away from AI. They're the ones using all the disposable cameras out on the streets. We're the suckers. We're the ones who end up sharing nonsense from a Facebook feed to our WhatsApp groups and saying, did you see this? I don't know if it's true, but God, it's worrying, isn't it? That sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I completely agree with Katrina.
Okay, so Simon, you have a great experience in this as the principal of a primary school. So is Adrian right that the younger people are really sensible and savvy?
I don't think they are. I think it's an area where they're not ready for that world. I mean, they're not ready to do a lot of things in the world, children. And when a parent hands them a smartphone, I mean, I think there's a New York Times kind of joke that says, you know, it's been lovely getting to know you. Now here's your first smartphone as the punchline.
You're and lose them.
They sort of lose them. And I can even see it in my own job, and I see it from speaking to other teachers and principals, that you can nearly tell physically the difference between children who have a smartphone of their own and those who don't.
Tell me what the difference is.
It's mood a lot of the time, you know, because of lack of sleep, tiredness, all that sort of stuff. Just the innocence sort of gone a little bit because they're seeing things they're not ready for, all that sort of stuff. And it does really, really worry me. You know, even to the point I've heard of school trips, overnight school trips being cancelled because they didn't have enough interest because children didn't want to break their streak on Snapchat or something like that. You know, those kind of awful little things that just sound really distasteful. And I mean,
you're talking about kids, though.
I'm talking about young kids who shouldn't be having smartphones in the first place. We know that, but they're getting them. You know, I think by the time they become teenagers, they're probably so they've probably gotten over it. But at the same time, that's who I mean. That they're the
so
kids
without
I'm
knowing
with.
Who has a smartphone in a class, you can probably tell is what you're saying.
Look, more or less, you know, it's not a. It's not an easy yes or no.
Not an exact science, but there are signs that you will see.
Absolutely. Certainly through lack of sleep, you can see it. And, you know, it's tricky. It's a tough situation.
Sort of terrifying, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Okay, well, on that depressing note, let's leave it there. But let's all watch our phone use over the weekend. Adrian, taking on board, and you, Katrina, what you both said. Thank you very much for coming in. Adrian Wechter, Simon Lewis and Katrina Redmond. That brings us to the end of the programme and the end of the week. Thank you to everybody who has listened and also to the people who got in touch, so many of you over the course of the week. If you missed anything and you want to listen back, you can go to the Go Loud app. A huge thank you to the team this Friday, Cormac McDonough on sound, producers Alex Russo and Dee King, research by David O'Connor, me, Sherwood and Shanna Cole. Our broadcast assistant is Anne-Marie Kane.
The Clare Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.